two dots at the top of Chaf Hei Amud Beis. So the Mishnah told us back on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, right? The Mishnah quoted the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, where Rabbi Yishmael told us that Ein Madlikin BeItron Mipnei Kvod HaShabbos. That you're not allowed to light using Itron. Itron is, you know, kerosene, some kind of a very, very pungent, foul-smelling oil. You're not allowed to light with kerosene for Hadlakas Neir Shabbos because it's not Bechavodik to Shabbos. It, you know, it smells terrible. Therefore, you can't light with it. So the Gemara asks my time, what exactly is the issue with lighting with kerosene for Nero Shabbos? So Amar Rava, Mitoch Shericho Ra, Gzeira Shema Yenichena V'yatza. The concern is that since the kerosene, since the itron is so foul-smelling, it's so overpoweringly bad, there's a concern that you're going to get up and walk out of the meal. So the Gemara asks, okay, Amar Le'abai V'yatza. Like, okay, so what? So, okay, so you're going to leave the meal. Why is that such a big deal? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Le Shani Omer Hadlakas Ner B'Shabes Chova. There's an obligation. Now, when the Gemara says that Hadlakas Ner B'Shabes Chova, it doesn't just mean that lighting candles for Shabbos is a chova, but also what it means is that your Suda Shabbos has to be eaten by the Nero Shabbos. That's a Gemara in Yuma. That part of the fulfillment of Kavod Shabbos is to eat your meal in front of the Neros. So if the smell of the Neros is so overpowering, that's going to cause you to leave the room, so then there's no way that you're going to stay there, and you're not going to fulfill that obligation. To Amar Rav Nachman,
in
yes.
In today's world, if I light my Shabbos candles in one room, but I have adequate light, obviously, from overhead light,
That's a good question. It's a good question. The simple answer is probably yes, because part of the assumption of this Gemara is that you're eating in a place that's well lit that you can see. Because the Gemara says that usually people can't enjoy their food as much if they can't see what they're eating. So you're right. So today, when everyone has electricity, so you know most likely that would be, you know, sufficient enough grounds that you don't specifically need to light candles, you know, in the room that you're in. Although it probably still is better to do that anyway. Okay, so the Gemara says, "De Amar Rav Nachman bar Rav Zavda, va'amri lo Amar Rav Nachman bar Rav Amar Rav, hadlakas ner b'Shabbos chova." So, like we just said, lighting candles for Shabbos is a chova, and specifically to eat your Suda Shabbos in front of Nero Shabbos is a chova. Whereas rechitzas yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvis rishus. Whereas washing your hands and your feet before Shabbos begins in hot water, in other words, bathing essentially, that's only a rishus. Va'ani omer mitzvah, however, comes along Abai and disagrees. Abai says, no, I think it's actually a mitzvah to bathe before Shabbos. The Gemara asks, my mitzvah, what kind of mitzvah is that? To Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, kachayam in Hagosho Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. This was the practice of Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. Erev Shabbos mevi'im lo areva melei achamen. On Friday afternoon, they would bring him like a bowl full of hot water. V'rochitz panav yada v'raglav. He would wash his face, his hands, and his feet. U'misatev v'yoshev b'sedinin hamitzuyatzin. He would sit and wrap himself in this cloak that had tzitzis on it. V'domel l'malach Hashem tzivakos. And he resembled a malach of Hashem. His students would conceal or hide from him the corners of their garments, because their garments, as we'll see in a second, did not have tzitzis on them, so they didn't want him to realize that they didn't have tzitzis on their garments. So Amar Lahen, so Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says to his students, Beni, lo kach shanisi lachem, didn't I teach you, sudden betzitzis, beishamai potrin, uve silo mechayvin, v'halacha kedivrei b'silo? There's a machlokas in the Gemara in Menachos about whether sedinim, which are basically like blankets or sheets or things like that, whether those are chayiv and tzitzis, and we paskin like b'silo that they are. So he turns around to his students and says, how do you justify wearing this cloak, wearing this sheet around, draped around you, and not putting tzitzis on it? If we follow Beis Hillel. So what was the logic of the students? Why didn't they put tzitzis on this garment? In Husavre, gzeira mishum ksus laila. The students said the reason why we're not putting tzitzis on this garment is because we're afraid that the next thing you know is that when we wear pajamas, we're also going to have tzitzis on them. I'm sorry. We're not going to put tzitzis on them. What's the issue here exactly? So the case of sedinim, as the Gemara points out in Menachos, is basically a garment that's made out of shatnez. And we know, of course, normally wearing shatnez is an isser d'oraisa, right? Normally you can't wear wool and linen together. However, the Gemara in Yevamos and the Gemara in Menachos says explicitly that if you have a garment of tzitzis, in other words, let's say, for example, you're wearing a woolen garment with linen strings, or a linen garment with woolen strings, the Gemara says that's mutter. You're allowed to do that. How do we know that? What's the source for that? So the Gemara in Yevamos develops a very famous principle that's called Asei Dochalos Asei, right? I have a mitzvah Asei to wear tzitzis. I have an Isser de Oraisa to not wear shanis. So the Gemara says that the mitzvah Asei comes along and overpowers the lav. And specifically, the Gemara cites cites the juxtaposition of two psukim in Parshas Kisetze, where the Torah first tells us Lo Silbat Shanis Tzemeru Fishtim Yachtov, don't wear shanis. And then in the very next pasuk, the Torah says Gedilim Tasalach. It says wear tzitzis. So the obvious connection to those two psukim would indicate that putting tzitzis on a garment of shatnez allows me to wear shatnez. Now, practically speaking, we don't do that because it's very easy to avoid wearing shatnez if you don't need to wear it. So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara quotes the opinion of Reish Lakish in Yevamos. Reish Lakish says, if you don't need to violate the Isser, then don't do it. You're better, in other words, you can just wear a wool garment with wool strings or a linen garment with linen strings. There's nothing compelling you to have to do this. So practically, we don't do that. That's what Reish Lakish says, and that's what we actually do.
Yeah. What is the principle applied? Ased ochelot ased.
Okay. That's a very complicated question. That's a beginning of Yevamos topic. The first couple of daf in Maseches Yevamos discuss the parameters of that. Does it apply to an Isser Kareis? Does it only apply to a regular law? That's a very, very complicated issue, which is not really our topic right now, but it comes up more when we get to the beginning of Seder Nashim. Hopefully we'll talk more about that. So that's more of a Yevamos topic. Okay, so in other words, in theory, you could, again, obviously not practically, but in theory, you could have worn a shatnez garment with tzitzis on it. The problem, however, is, and this is what the students of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yochai were addressing, is that idea that I can wear tzitzis on a garment and that can override the issur of shatnez is provided that the garment that I'm wearing is chayiv in tzitzis. If you're wearing pajamas, so pajamas are pater min tzitzis. There happens to be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rush. We talk about not wearing tzitzis at night. So what does that mean? Does that mean that in other words, that at nighttime I don't have to wear tzitzis? Or does that mean that night clothing are not chayiv and tzitzis? So the obvious nafkamina would be if you're wearing pajamas during the day or you're wearing regular clothing at night, would you still be chayiv and tzitzis? So that's a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Rush. But let's say, for example, you're wearing pajamas at night, so everyone agrees that you're not chayiv and tzitzis. So the students were concerned that if we start wearing shatnez garments with tzitzis during the day, the next thing you know, we're going to start wearing pajamas that are not chayiv and tzitzis and that are also shatnez, and we're going to come to violate the Isser d'oraisa of shatnez. So that's why the students did not feel comfortable putting tzitzis on these garments, so they shouldn't get confused when it comes to because this way they shouldn't think that, you know, when they're wearing their pajamas, they could just wear it as shatnez without actually putting tzitzis on it. Okay.
Okay. Rabbi,
yeah.
What's the story with the students? Who would they just tell their Rebbe they don't have to do it? If the Rebbe tells them, why don't they listen to them?
It's good. Fair question. We actually saw something a little bit similar to this in earlier Dafim, where after Shammai and Hillel would institute certain takanos, we had this back in the first parak, so the Gemara says that no one accepted it from them, and then their students came along and instituted the exact same takana, and then everyone all of a sudden accepted it. So I think it could be that Me'ikar Adin Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yochai was correct, that really they should have worn tzitzis. We really do follow Beis Hillel. It could be that maybe Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yochai wasn't concerned for this gezeira, but maybe the gezeira became more necessary as time went on. Again, as gzeros go, so usually a gzera is a response to some sort of a need that arises. So it could be that in the days of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yochai, when he was, you know, when he was younger, so no one ever had this concern that, oh, maybe I'm going to get confused and wear shatnez pajamas. But maybe when his students were around, so something happened that caused that to be a legitimate concern. So maybe that was the issue. Again, I don't know exactly what the historical background or the context of this gzera was, like how it came to be, but it could be that for him it wasn't such a concern, but maybe for his students it was a legitimate thing that needed to be instituted. So it's not so crazy to say that. Okay, so now the Gemara kind of almost parenthetically cites a pasuk from Eicha that relates also to preparing for Shabbos and things that we kind of spoke about. The pasuk in Eicha says "Vatiznach mishalom nafshi nashi si tova," which basically means that Hashem has like rejected, has pushed peace away from our soul, and we've forgotten all the good that Hashem has done for us. So what does that mean? Ma'iva tiznach mishalom nafshi. Amar Rabbi Avahu zohad lakas ner b'Shabbos. That refers to the mitzvah of lighting candles before Shabbos. Then the pasuk says, nashi si tova, I've forgotten the good. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah zo beis hamerchat. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says that refers to going to the bathhouse, to bathing before Shabbos. And then the girsa in the Gemara here should be Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan zo rechitzas yadayim v'raglim mecham. And that simply refers to washing your hands and your legs in hot water. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Amar Zomita Na'ev Chilim Na'im She'aleha. That pasuk refers to having, you know, your bed set and having all of your having all of your kelim, you know, beautiful on the table. Rabbi Abba Amar Zomita Mutzas V'Isha Mekushetes L'Salmidei Chacham. Again, it refers to a bed that was set, and it refers to a wife who is adorned, who looks beautiful for Talmidei Chacham. The idea being, again, all these different opinions in the Gemara are essentially emphasizing the idea that you know, when one is preparing themselves for Shabbos, they're supposed to be in a certain frame of mind, whether it refers to bathing, whether it refers to setting the table, whether it refers to having nice kelim, whether it refers to having your wife looking, you know, looking nice. All those things are underscoring the idea that you're supposed to prepare for Shabbos in a certain way. Okay? Now the Gemara says, also kind of related to this point, Tanu Rabbanan, Eze Ashir, what's the definition of a person who's wealthy? Kol sheyesh lo nachas ruach ba'ashro divremer. This is very reminiscent of the Mishnah Pirkei Avos of Hasameach Bechelko, right? If you're happy with what you have, if you're happy with your lot, so Rameir says, then you're considered to be wealthy. Then the Gemara gives a simon, gives a mnemonic device for the next couple of shitas we're going to quote, where other Tanayim and Amoraim gave different opinions about the definition of a wealthy person. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Kol Sheish L'Kuf Kramim U'Me'a Sados L'Kuf Avadim She'ovdin Ban. If you have 100 vineyards, 100 fields, and 100 servants to tend to your vineyards and fields, then you're called wealthy. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kol Sheish L'Isha Na'a B'Masim. If you have a wife who has beautiful actions, in other words, she's considered to be like a balas maaseh, she's a balas chesed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Sheyesh Lo Beis HaKiseh Samach L'Shulchano, if you have easy access to a bathroom. This is actually very reminiscent of a Gemara in Brachos, where the Gemara in Brachos spoke about that, the Gemara in Brachos, in the beginning of Brachos, quoted a pasuk from Mishlei that says, Matzah Chayim Matzah Tov. If you find life, then you'll find goodness. And one of the opinions, which the Gemara actually accepted that as the correct opinion, is that that pasuk refers to a person who has easy access to a bathroom. Because again, you have to realize, the times of the Gemara, they all used outhouses, and they all had to go, you know, travel, you know, certain distances in order to use the bathroom. So having easy access to a bathroom, ki'ilu, made you a wealthy person. It made you someone who had, you know, who had easy access to a bathroom, who wasn't always, you know, looking around to, you know, to use the bathroom. What exactly is going on in this Gemara? How come the Gemara thinks that a wealthy person can range from someone who has a lot of vineyards and fields to someone who has, to someone who has a wife who has good deeds? So the Marsha has a whole interesting discussion about this Gemara, where he thinks that, you know, it could refer to a person, on the one hand, who is, you know, running after physicality, and a person, as we know, there's a famous medrash in Koheles Rabbah that says that when a person dies, they die without even fulfilling half of their desires. So in other words, he says that the idea, like, for example, the opinion we quoted from Rabbi Tarfon, that it refers to a guy with 100 fields and 100 vineyards and 100 servants, that's just like a metaphor to say that this guy has a lot, but it's never going to be enough for him. So in other words, the Gemara is assuming that all these different shitos are reflecting different aspects of what it means to be wealthy. It can either refer to physical wealth, or it could also refer to spiritual, to emotional satisfaction, to being happy with what you have, like we saw from Rabbi Meir. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, in Madlikin Bitsri. So we also quoted this earlier, that you're not allowed to light with balsam oil for Nero Shabbos. So my time, what's the issue here exactly? Amar Rabba, mitoch shericho nodev, gzeira shema yistapik mimedu. Because this balsam oil is very, very good smelling, it smells really, really nice. So there's a concern that you're going to want the smell to start wafting around the house. And basically what you're going to do is you're going to start to, you know, take some of the oil out of the candle to maybe, you know, rub it on your skin, or to move it around, or whatever it is, and that's going to be a violation of mechabe. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be in effect extinguishing the flame, because even if you remove a little bit of oil from a candle, that's a violation of mechabe. So Amar le Abaye. So Abaye says back to Rabba, Lema mar mipenesha huaf. Why are we only saying that the issue here is mechabe, is that you're going to extinguish? There's a much more fundamental problem, which is that you're going to burn the house down, because apparently this balsam oil was considered to be very volatile. It was considered to be something which, if it caught onto something else, it could burn your whole house down. Why is that not the more pressing issue here? The Gemara says, you're right. Chada va'od ka'ama. Really, there are really two issues here. Chada mipnei shehua. First of all, it's very volatile. It could burn down the house. Va'od gzera shema yistapik mimenu. And again, almost as a secondary concern, there's also this problem of mechaba. Now the Gemara quotes what is arguably one of the oddest stories in all of Shas. I don't know if there's a story more strange than this one in the Gemara. I'm not sure. So the Gemara says, Ahi chamsa dehava sniya lo lechala. So this part is not so odd. There was a mother-in-law who hated her daughter-in-law, as things go. So Amra la, so she said to her, Zil ikshit b'mishcha da'afar sima. So she told her, go put on some balsam oil. Go, you know, adorn yourself with this, you know, sweet-smelling oil. So Azla ikshit, so she went and put the oil on. Ki asas, when she came down, so Amrullah, so the mother-in-law says to her, Zil isle shraga, go and light the candle. So Isla Shraga, she lit the candle, Infach Panura Va'achalta, and then the fire caught hold of her, and she got consumed by the fire, and she died. Now, the reason why, I mean, aside from that, the story is just completely, completely out there, and completely odd. I was looking around there. I found virtually no Mefarshim who talk about this story. Like there's almost no one who says anything. I was trying to find something. So some people say that this story is like a mushel to refer to like the relationship of Bnei Yisrael to Hashem. Some say it's a mushel about people giving into their Yetzer Hara. I couldn't really find a shot that was like, you know, very satisfying with the story. It's just a very odd story. And again, obviously the reason why it's mentioned here is because of the type of oil that she used. But like beyond that, I don't really understand exactly what's going on in the story. So if you have questions about the story, I probably won't be able to answer it because I don't really fully understand it myself. Okay, let's go to the next two dots.
It's not so strange. My mother-in-law would have done
that
had she known that word.
I said the first part of the story is not so strange. The mother-in-law hates the daughter-in-law, but I think the rest of this seems a little bit intense. I don't know. Okay, so let's just do a drop more. So now the Gemara also parenthetically cites a pasuk from the end of Sefer Yirmiyahu. The pasuk says, "Umidalosa aretz hishir Nevuzaradan rav tabachim l'chor mimuli yogvim." So this pasuk is referring to the fact that Nevuzaradan, who was the head general or officer of Nebuchadnezzar's army, he was really the one responsible for the Churban Beis Hamikdash. So he left a couple of people remaining in Eretz Yisrael. Again, this was like the backdrop to the story of the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam. Right, that's what we found. So Gedaliah was the one who was left in charge of the Jews who were allowed to remain in Eretz Yisrael. So Nevuzaradan, he basically left, the as the pasuk says, l'chor mimuli yogvim. These categories of Jews were allowed to stay back in Eretz Yisrael. So who exactly were these people? So Kormim, the Gemara says, Tanei Rav Yosef, Elu Malakte Afar Simon Me'in Gedi V'an Ramsa. So these refer to the people who were gathering the persimmon oil, again, the balsam oil that we spoke about before, from Ein Gedi until Ramsa. And Yogvim, Elu Tzayadechi Lazon, Misulamos Shol Tzur V'ar Chaifa. And the Yogvim refer to those people who would hunt and trap the Chilazon. Again, we know, of course, the Chilazon is that, I think the official scientific name for it is the Murex trunculus. It's like this little squid type of thing that's used to make tchiles. So they would hunt and find these chilazon from the promontories of Tzur until Haifa. So those are the people that Nevuzaradan let live in the city. Okay, so we'll stop here for now.